This is The Dime, a 10-minute dive into the cannabis and hemp industry through trends, insights, predictions, and tangents.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to The Dime. As always, I've got my right-hand man, Kellen Finney, and this week we've got two very special guests, pioneers in the space, Ken Snoke and Wes Burke from Emerald Scientific. Gentlemen, thanks for taking the time. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, doing great. Thanks. Appreciate being here, you guys. I think this is a fantastic little show you guys are doing.
I appreciate that. This week, we've got a unique topic, and we think the two of you are perfect to kind of bring us back to the beginning of the evolution of the cannabis industry. More specifically, before we get started, can each of you kind of take us through how you originally got started into the space and what your backgrounds are? Wes, do you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah, I came to cannabis from the real estate industry, believe it or not. So I had been working as a real estate agent and broker for about 20 years, and I had the good fortune of being neighbors and really close friends with Ken Snoke. And I came to learn over the years that Ken is a serial entrepreneur and has built several successful companies. And I think he saw a little bit of that entrepreneurship in me, and he came to me with the idea in 2014, which I'll let him explain how he got there. But I have to credit my being in the industry to Ken, and I couldn't be more thrilled about it. It's been the absolute funnest ride of my entire life.
Yeah, and from my standpoint, this is Ken. So I had a career in biotechnology, mostly basic research, but moved kind of in a couple different segments and managed to take a hiatus and move to Oregon to try my hand at organic vegetable gardening, of all things, and farming. So I was trying to do some small farming, and through that met a handful of cannabis growers at the time that were starting in the medical program in Oregon. And because of the background I have in science, just started to have some ideas about how scientific products fit into the, you know, potentially to the cannabis industry. I mean, if you look at it from the standpoint of it being a partly, you know, medical industry, it's an agriculture industry, it's a commodity, it's a recreational substance, and all of those things, if you look at those independently, rely heavily at some point throughout their life stage on contributions from science at different levels. And when I looked around the industry back in 2013, there were some big challenges there because of the nature of the two industries. They didn't overlay very well, let's just say. And I think the reasons are obvious. The segmented market in cannabis, because every state doing things a little bit differently during the legalization rollout, as we continue to see today, really presented some challenges. Back then, the stigma still of cannabis really presented some challenges, while I don't think that's so much an issue today. And it really created a scenario where it made sense to have a dedicated scientific supplier to the industry. And that's when I went and chatted with Wes, and I guess the rest is history.
Yeah, and I think that history has really made a huge marker on the industry. So can you explain a little bit to our listeners who are just unfamiliar with Emerald Scientific and the unique value that it brings to the industry?
Yeah, sure. So we are a dedicated scientific product distributor to the cannabis industry. I'll go back to my time in research. Oftentimes, we depended on our suppliers for technical support, helping us decide, what areas we might pursue first based on product availability and a bunch of other factors. And so I think where Emerald Scientific really lines up, where we really bring value, is our understanding of thousands and tens of thousands of scientific products and how they fit into different segments of the industry, whether it's in cultivation or manufacturing, extraction, the quality assurance testing, research, all of those areas have different components where they really depend on scientific products. So everything from instrumentation for measurement, all of your scales and balances and microscopes, of course, all the benchtop equipment and instrumentation, but all of the consumable products too, it's a pretty broad category, but from a scientific products category, that can mean a very specific calibration standard that's a cocktail of compounds to help you calibrate an instrument, let's say for pesticide testing of cannabis or potency testing, all the way through to test tubes and gloves and chemicals and solvents and things like that. So we started out in really targeting the quality assurance segment of the industry, because back in 2014, that was really the segment that needed, I guess, our help the most, if you will. And so that was really where we specialized early on, and we've moved into the other segments of the industry since.
There's a little bit, if I can tag on, there's a little bit of a chicken and the egg dilemma with being a scientific distributor. The vendors that you need to supply products would like for distributors to have a customer base, and a customer base would like for distributors to have product offerings. So it's a little challenging to break into an industry as a distributor because of that. And we were lucky and got some really great counsel from some folks that had experience in similar scenarios. And that counsel in particular was that the industry probably could really benefit from a proficiency test as well as potentially a scientific conference. And at the time in 2013 and 14, there just wasn't really a venue, a conference venue where high level science was the focus. Most of the conferences back then were a little more consumer facing. And so we launched the Emerald Test and the Emerald Conference in 2014. And it did a lot, not only to deliver those much needed services to the industry, but it also did a lot to help us establish a brand and build those relationships with our initial customers, as well as our initial vendors.
Yeah, and I definitely want to expand on the Emerald Test, but I wanted to kind of ask one question before we dove in. What was the industry like in 2014? Obviously, here we are in 2021, and the industry's made massive, massive advancements, and we're still nowhere near where we need to be as a federal level. But what was it like in 2014? Can you kind of shed some light on what that experience was like?
Ken, go ahead. I'd love to hear your perspective on that.
Trying to remember, you know, it's been such a whirlwind. It doesn't feel like 7 years to me as far as time goes, but certainly as far as industry progress, I think it feels like 20. And so, it was a really different environment, you know, then, the nascency of the industry was such that, so many of the pioneers, I think that our industry probably doesn't give enough credit to that were active during the black market. And, you know, whatever our perception is or our opinions about the illicit market and the market before it was legal are, back in those days, you know, there was a lot of talk about the gray market. And this was this gray area between what was legal and what wasn't. I mean, you know, we were still in a time back then when anybody in the industry that was abiding by the rules of the medical program in their state could at any time be busted, you know, by feds or the state. I mean, you just never knew what you were going to get into. And so that there was this, you know, this real challenge to begin working in the industry. And, you know, even for us, we're a few steps removed from the plant. And still, we do have compounds, you know, for like the calibration standards I was talking about that do contain cannabinoids and things like that. So it felt really risky still at the time. You know, it just felt like we might just go out there and work for a few years and have everything taken away from us. And that's one big difference between back then and at least today. I feel like there is enough momentum now that at least I don't wake up in the middle of the night thinking that something's going to happen that's just going to end everything. And maybe that's still a little bit naive. I don't know. I hope not.
Yeah. And I think we've watched science evolve at a pace that's not normal for other industries either. I mean, back in 2014, some of the labs that we were working with were operated out of folks' garages. And it's certainly a different climate than that now. And I think as we, you know, as we look back at the content of the Emerald Conference over the last 6 or 7 years, I mean, we went from kind of science 101 to a much, much deeper level. And I think that that's one of the funnest things for me to watch, is just how fast this industry has matured.
Yeah, the Emerald Conference is one of my favorite events of the year. Obviously, going to San Diego is nice, and it's right around this beautiful time too. So it's a shame that we're not all there now. And the depth of the science at these conferences are just mind blowing. Kel and I have a couple experiences. We'd be in the back listening to the speakers and then just be mind blown about kind of the depths and the understanding of some of the data that's being presented. And it's pretty insane. So Kellen, do you have any concepts of a favorite stories of Emerald Scientific, or maybe kind of dive us into the conversation about the Emerald test?
I became familiar with Emerald Scientific specifically as a vendor when I was operating up in Humboldt, and I went down to the Emerald Conference, and I think it was the third annual conference. And being from traditional academia, I think Wes said it just perfectly. There was absolutely nothing out there from a scientific content perspective. And so it was such a breath of fresh air going into that conference and seeing all these really professional individuals doing real science and unbelievable science. And there were some really cool studies in particular regarding methyl jasminate and how it increases terpene production. That is one particular talk that I listened to. And it was really cool because I went back to Humboldt and I was talking to a grower and I was like, oh no, like you should try this chemical. They couldn't get it anywhere else. I literally called up Emerald and Emerald was like, oh yeah, no, perfect. Like, this is the cast number you want. This is exactly the concentration you want. And they were able to execute on that order. And that was, since then, I've just been a huge, huge Emerald fan. So that's kind of my Emerald story as it sits.
That's great to hear, Kellen. Thanks for telling that.
Yeah, no worries.
So from a research standpoint, obviously from where we started in 2014 and where we are now, we've come a long way. Where do you guys see the biggest need for an investment from a research standpoint, and what do you think that looks like from a time frame perspective?
So research is really interesting. You know, if we look at research, there's different levels, right? So we might think of within the quality assurance setting. So the third-party testing labs, they might perform some research to figure out better methods for testing, for example. So there's, you know, that kind of ongoing research. There's, you know, at the cultivation level, there's always research going on, right? So cultivators are constantly modifying scenarios, looking at different ways for production. One of the things that when you kind of look at more of the pharmaceutical model. So cannabis is interesting on the medical side because it's both a medicine and a pharmaceutical. And those are different things largely. Medicines can be, you know, natural supplements. They can be all sorts of things. They can have some support by data of clinical studies, or they may not have a lot of support. I think as a medicine, cannabis has a fair amount of data now from clinical studies, both formal and informal. And we're learning a ton from those studies. When I think of the pharmaceutical model that really looks at this very basic research in the preclinical setting, where compounds are put through usually cellular models, looking at responses from cell lines that have an importance in a particular disease, let's say. So you might have a cell line that has a response that you've grown up that mimics a certain type of cancer or a certain type of autoimmunity or something like that. And you can start to look at the way compounds impact the behavior of these cells. So these are very early research models in the clinical pathway. And then beyond that, you enter into the phase 1, 2, and 3 clinical trials of compounds that are going through this pharmaceutical pathway. And I think that's an area where particularly the preclinical studies are really going to change over the next few years. And it's one that any type of federal rescheduling could have a dramatic impact on. The availability of the compounds for research is incredibly challenging when they're Schedule One.
Let's talk about Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. That's right. No more excuses. Get your lazy ass off the couch. Go start a podcast. There's the creation tool that allows you to record, and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Once again, no more excuses. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Couldn't be easier. Even better, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. That's right. They're paying us for this ad. Thank you very much, Anchor. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started now.
So how does one go about making sure that the chemicals in these preclinical trials are of the highest quality? Is there a specific means that exists right now for kind of making sure that they meet a specific quality?
Not much. I mean, and that's one of the areas where Emerald is really moving into, is starting to create cannabinoids and terpenoids and different compounds in different formulations that are compatible for preclinical research. So that, and those are very different than the formulations that are necessary for those for quality assurance work, for example. And so we're going to be releasing soon in the next several months our initial product line for the preclinical research market. And we're really excited about it. I think it can really help the research segment to really start to look at some of these compounds and their preclinical models.
And it's interesting, this plant kind of it brings to bear this nuance that I think is different from much of the medical or pharmaceutical research in the past, where you may have a, you know, even if it's plant derived, you start out with a handful of compounds of interest. And so the research is usually fairly limited to those compounds, but cannabis is a different animal. I mean, there's hundreds of cannabinoids, hundreds of terpenes. We're starting to contemplate the impact of flavonoids. So really there's so much potential for research based on that unique characteristic of this plant.
Yeah, and I think, Ken, you said it perfect. I think it was 2 years ago at the Emerald Scientific Conference, after 3 days and closing out the conference, you came up and said, it seems like we know nothing. And that, I think, was so eye-opening for me to hear that even after all these studies and all these advancements, we're still in like the bottom of the first in understanding from a scientific standpoint, like where we are with the cannabinoids and how it can really work with the human body. Kellen, what's your thoughts from an educational standpoint and a research standpoint of the direction of the industry?
I mean, I think preclinical work, as well as kind of just the basic science that is the foundation for these more advanced studies that we're used to hearing about in your traditional pharmaceutical world, right? I mean, when I started, you couldn't look up the boiling point of THC, right? So we've come a really, really long way in the last 5 years, but with the lack of funding to our traditional institutes, because of its federal scheduling right now, it's just, we don't have that robust foundation where you have all of these institutes, colleges and universities that are federally funded, that are providing and pumping out the groundwork to base a lot of the more complex studies to gain a deeper understanding of how these cannabinoids are interacting with the endocannabinoid system. I mean, we're still not exactly sure the binding affinities and all of those for these G-coupled CB1 and CB2 proteins right now. And so the fundamentals are absolutely more important than ever right now to be able to build on. Because right now we're trying to build the second floor of this house, and no, we haven't even poured the concrete yet.
Yeah, interesting. That's a great way to look at it.
So let's dive into a listener question. What do you think is the biggest issue or hindrance for the current state of the cannabis industry? It can be anything. Wes, we can start with you.
Well, I mean, I think I'll state the obvious. You can call me Captain Obvious after this, but I think the lack of a federal legal framework and a federal regulatory framework, it's really the giant impediment. I mean, when Kellen talks about the organizations that are typically well-funded for research, that's very challenging in this legal framework or lack of a legal framework. And I think once we see some changes on the federal front from a legal standpoint, even if it is descheduling or rescheduling, I think the floodgates are going to come wide open, and we're going to start to really see another boom in the evolution of science in the industry.
Yeah, one thing I would add to that I don't hear talked about frequently is the notion that framework might need to be very different for the medical path versus the rec path. You know, right now we get everything kind of held under one roof. And if you look at other scenarios, those are incredibly different pathways, you know, from a regulatory standpoint. And I think looking at really the medical piece, you know, and thinking about what kind of federal oversight is really useful for us to move that forward is really important. And then also considering the recreational use path, that's probably a really different framework. I mean, I'll give you a very personal example. I have a daughter that has benefited from, she's got a chronic disease, and she benefits from cannabinoid compounds. The consideration for me as a 55-year-old guy using cannabis recreationally is incredibly different and should have a different level of oversight than a 14-year-old girl. You know, let's be frank, I can handle some pesticides at my age. They're probably, you know, not going to have a huge impact on me. A daily consumption of pesticides on a developing brain is a very and heavy metals, same thing. You know, all these contaminants we think about, that's a very, very different scenario than the rec path. So it's one of the things that I think is a really big challenge today, is considering how to break out these different components of the industry.
I think that's, very well said. I mean, there's a massive difference between the quality of product that comes out of a $20 million pharmaceutical facility versus the quality of product that comes out of a $1 million facility in a garage. You know what I mean? It's just that kind of money and that kind of science buys you a much purer compound. And that's why pharmaceuticals are where they are. And you know exactly what that individual is ingesting and putting in their body versus some of these unknowns associated with lower quality products.
Yeah, so I completely agree. I think what's interesting is maybe in cannabis, or I believe there is a place for both of those. You know, I don't think that's always the case, right? So for certain compounds, I'd say no, they probably only deserve or should only be down the pharmaceutical path. And I'm not hoping that or wishing that for cannabis as an industry. I don't want to force everything down a pharmaceutical pathway. I think it has plenty of its own challenges and faults for sure. So I agree with you, Kellen. And I think those the neat thing about where we are is there can be a place for both of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, the industry is just in its infancy stage, and I think it starts with education. It can start all the way through from the scientists all the way back down to the consumers. I think we as a society can do a better job being just educated, and I think that takes some time. So I think over the next couple months, hopefully we'll start accelerating and these types of advancements will pick up, and we'll start to lay the groundwork like we all stated here to really start to understand the nuances of the plant.
Yeah, another real challenge are sampling schemes on the scientific testing part. You know, we go through a lot of work to really dial in so much of our testing, and it continues to be an area. But in other industries, a lot of attention has been placed on exactly where along the supply chain do you test, you know, how much do you take as a sample size? And those really have an impact on how the ultimate data that you generate from quality assurance testing, it really impacts the relevance of that data. You know, how you make heads and tails of it and what you do with it is really sometimes based on the sampling schemes. And unless things have changed in the last couple of weeks, I think it's still a really big hole in our industry.
Where do you want to see that going?
I think it just comes down to sampling schemes. It's statistics. It's data and statistics, you know, and it's really about who is going to put up the money for doing those kinds of studies. And I'm not always a huge fan of federal oversight. I don't want to lead anybody down that path, but I really believe in the quality assurance scenario and in the research scenario, there are really important places where federal oversight can help. And I think these sampling schemes are often presented by, you know, the USDA or the FDA or something like that. And that's an area right out of the gate that I would hope that they would could really assist the industry. You know, I'd love to believe that these agencies will take a step back and really see where these holes are, you know, see where they can move the industry forward. Am I, is it a pipe dream?
It's a good hope. It's just right?
So slow.
Yeah.
So let's hop into prediction time. Over the next year, what advancements do you believe we accomplish from an industry-wide standpoint? And that can be wherever you want to take that. Wes, do you want to start?
Yeah, I think I'm going to predict that we see the banking issue resolved by the end of the year. And I think that that is going to allow access to institutional money. And I think we're going to see another boom in the industry. And I think that will spill over into the sciences and the life sciences and the research and development.
I second that. I agree completely, Wes. I think we have a tendency to talk about federal legalization like it's a single stroke sometimes. And we're going to look back years from now and realize that it was a whole series of events. And I think the banking piece is, we might just look back and say that that was the most important step. I think rescheduling or descheduling is another one that's coming, but I'm not going to go so far as to say that in the next year. But I think the Safe Banking Act and other banking regulations could be hugely impactful.
Yeah, I completely agree with both of you guys. I think the banking will get resolved. There's just a bunch of institutional investors jumping in now on their own merit. And I think it's the next domino to fall. And I think the science space will probably be the largest to benefit from that, because they're going to want to know what they're getting themselves into. And the best way to do that is just to fund that research, you know?
Yeah. Who's training this next generation of scientists though? As the industry is exploding, the job market is just booming, right? And all these operators who are scaling as fast as possible are looking to put these qualified individuals into spaces across the United States. At a certain point, we're not going to have enough qualified individuals. So I think universities are going to have to accelerate the training program. Maybe the MSOs kind of develop this out, or maybe there's a third party that starts educating these operators to kind of transition to these roles, because the expectations is just there's going to be too much demand and not enough supply. So I don't know what they're going to do about that.
Well, you guys have to realize that organizations like Eighth Revolution and information channels like the Dime Podcast, I mean, you guys are seniors in the industry now, and you're the ones that are taking the reins and taking responsibility for sharing and spreading that information. So I think it's you guys. Keep it up.
Well, appreciate that. We'll definitely have to take that in. So before we wrap, we ask all of our guests, when was the last time you consumed any cannabinoid product? Ken?
Last night.
Wes?
Today.
There it is. Thanks, guys, so much. We appreciate it. And where can everyone find you guys if they're interested? Get in touch. Do you have social handles? If not, do you have some sort of company profiles you could shout out?
Yeah, I mean, emeraldscientific.com is kind of the hub for Emerald Scientific. There's, you know, the emeraldtest.com. There's the emeraldconference.com. We're all over social media. We're not that hard to find. Just Google Emerald Scientific and you won't have any trouble finding us.
Yeah, we'll link you up in the show notes so everyone can find you guys and ask you any questions of what it was like in 2014. Thanks so much for your time, guys. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hey friends, I'm Brannon.
And I'm Saba.
And we are your host of the Cannabis Hangout Podcast, an educational platform to connect with the cannabis community and share personal stories while breaking the stigma of marijuana.
Join us every Sunday at 7 p.m. to gain valuable insight with different perspectives from industry leaders, growers, and medical marijuana patients.
This is a place to learn so much from different angles in the cannabis industry. So tune in
while we break it all down.